I am very happy to testify before any Congressional Oversight Committee. I have nothing to hide. I can explain and validate everything that I've done. So, you know, it's going to be inconvenient if they actually are out there essentially threatening to make my life miserable. But I'm going to do what I need to do, and that is cooperate fully, because we have nothing to hide at all.
Despite Joe Biden's last-minute preemptive pardon shielding him from past alleged crimes, Anthony Fauci still faced a high-stakes Senate grilling under a subpoena from Rand Paul, where any new falsehood under oath about gain-of-function funding, the Wuhan lab leak, alleged destroyed records, or the contradictions in his own newly released diaries could expose him to fresh perjury charges that the pardon does not cover.
You could not hide that your agency had funded the Wuhan research or your long history of defending gain-of-function research. The only alternative left was to argue that COVID-19 did not originate in the Wuhan lab. You were not a detached observer. You had an institutional interest in the public believing that federally funded research had nothing to do with the pandemic. It was a conflict of interest from the very beginning. The authors of the proximal origin of SARS-CoV-2 privately had serious doubts about a natural origin. Within days, though, they flipped, and they all wrote in proximal origin that the virus was almost certainly not a laboratory construct. That paper was then used by the government and the media and you to discredit Americans who were asking the same questions that you and the authors were asking yourselves privately.
Fauci's preemptive Biden pardon theoretically shields him from past criminal charges tied to his NIH work. He faced no genuine risk of self-incrimination and therefore had no valid Fifth Amendment privilege to refuse answering questions. Answers to questions millions of Americans demand. Any attempt to invoke it at the hearing could allow the committee to compel his testimony and pursue a contempt finding.
What was the Dan David Award? Do you remember, Doc?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution.
It was a $900,000 cash award. $900,000 cash award. And he got it, because he used federal employees to get it. And this wasn't the only award, was it, Dr. Fauci? In fact, you applied for and received at least 8 other federal cash prizes on federal time using federal employees and federal resources. Here they are over my shoulder.
Under advice of his stable of high-priced attorneys, Fauci pleaded the Fifth 111 times to a variety of simple and inane questions, causing him to look incredibly desperate.
This testimony is from Anthony Fauci. This is not a game with his lawyers. He can advise. His lawyers can give him advice. He's got a half dozen here. They're all allowed to talk to him.
Yes.
All right?
Yeah.
But the attorneys are not recognized. In fact, the attorney was told not to sit at the table, and he's not obeying that recommendation. There's a row behind you, sir. That's where you were told to sit, and you're not. And now you're disrupting the proceedings. And so, look, this is the way Anthony Fauci wants to be remembered, for a lawyer not listening to the rules. That's the way you want to be remembered, and that's what you're going to do. You are not recognized, sir. Security, please remove him from the room. In the red folder on your table is a copy of Section 192 of Title II of the U.S. Code. Your counsel has been provided a copy as well. That section makes it a crime for a witness appearing under subpoena to refuse to answer any questions pertinent to the question under inquiry. Do you have that in front of you?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution.
Let the record record that the witness has refused to answer whether there's a folder in front of him based on his Fifth Amendment right.
What day of the week is it today?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution.
What color tie are you wearing?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy.
1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with, my decision, and that is ivermectin with minbenazidil, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but minbenazidil is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search minbenazidil studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live today, the 31st of July. It's Friday. Big show we have for you today. We'll be joined by a couple of great guests, including Mark Lynch, who is running for office in South Carolina. He was Lindsey Graham's top challenger in 2026. And now he's up against the sister, I guess. Yeah, what we definitely don't need is to establish a pattern of old boomer warmonger senators dying in their close family kin just inheriting their position. No, we'll choose for ourselves. Thank you very much. And we like Mark Lynch. So we'll talk to him in the next hour. And in the third hour today, I'll be joined by George Alexopoulos, who, of course, is one of the most talented right-wing artists at work today. And we're going to talk about right-wing art and how useful it is in the information war to have really powerful, compelling art that actually speaks to human beings with souls. It's really a powerful thing. Yesterday, of course, the big story was the invasion of Ceuta, Spain. I figured out how to pronounce it. Ceuta, I believe. There's been some developments. There's been some developments. Now, I hinted at it a little bit yesterday, just off the basis of pattern recognition and unfriendly assumptions about the state of Israel. I thought they probably had something to do with it. Nothing really to base it on, but this is the beautiful thing about the world today. You can just sort of know stuff. I mean, this stuff is just kind of obvious if you're paying attention. Now, a lot of people will try to discredit you by pointing out that you have no evidence, but just wait. You just wait a little bit and that evidence arrives, sure enough. And it has. And so we're going to get into, some of the research that's been done, some of the background as to what led up to the scenes that you're seeing, the all-out invasion of 60,000 Moroccans, 60,000 foreigners going through Morocco into this Spanish enclave. And of course, the state of emergency and the deployment of soldiers. Now, apparently, they've been able to send some of these guys back. I guess there was a big effort last night into this morning to return some of the invaders to Morocco. But if this is, consistent with the pattern that we've seen before, they'll get in. They'll get in and they'll get on welfare and they'll be, planted in a military outpost in some small town in England in no time. So we'll just have to wait and see. But people, of course, have gone back in time and looked at some of this stuff. But this is the way it's being treated by the likes of Insurrection Barbie, who is, of course, we're not even sure if she's a real person, if it's a real person. The people have looked into it. She seems to be a shared propaganda account on X that is there to try desperately to portray support of Israel as a conservative position. It ain't, but that's what she/it does all the time. And she said this: blaming Jewish people for what's happening in Spain is a strange way of publicly advertising that you are brain dead. Pfft. Brilliant. Brilliantly put. You know, don't contend with any of the claims. Don't actually express what people are really saying. It's not just, oh, a bunch of Muslims going into Morocco. I bet it's the Jews. I bet the Jews are behind that. Yeah, you can set up that straw man and knock it down. Doesn't prove anything. Doesn't actually contend with any of the actual arguments being made or the very public statements by Israelis all over the place and for months about how they support and are encouraging and actively working through diplomatic back channels to bring this about. So I guess my question, all right, so she said, you know, you must be brain dead if you read what Israelis are saying and recognize it in reality. That makes you brain dead, which is not the same as anti-Semitic, but kind of similar. But I wonder why she didn't say anti-Semitic, because to me it seems like, okay, you know, it's one of those things. If the claim is anti-Semitic, what does that mean? That means it's unfair against Jews. It means it's contributing to the lie, to the canard, to the, you know, anti-Semitic trope that Jews might be willing to work with Muslims to destroy Christian nations. It would insinuate that Jews possibly inside Spain were in fact working for the state of Israel and against their own country as sort of natural traitors. It would be considered anti-Semitic because it would contribute to or justify or correspond with so many anti-Semitic tropes, claims made about Jewish people by people who hate Jews. It would obviously be an anti-Semitic claim. But what if it's true then? But then what if you look into it and the claim is true? Is it still anti-Semitic? Or is it just confirmation of the truth? Could be both. It could be both, right? The truth sometimes is a little bit anti-Semitic, is what we're learning. This is from Danny Dannon, who's has a position in the Israeli government. Spain, he's the ambassador to the United States, in fact. There you go. Spain, which never misses an opportunity to lecture Israel, has declared a state of emergency in Ceuta following the crisis over its immigration policy. Maybe before it continues lecturing us, it's time it explained to the world while it still maintains colonial enclaves in Africa. Well, bam. I mean, mic drop moment, right? Those hypocrites, Spain lecturing Israel. It's not really that complicated. Spain doesn't want to actively participate in genocide, and so the Israelis think that Spain deserves to be destroyed. That's what's going on here. Spain doesn't want to allow its Air Force facilities to have bombers launched from them who go on to bomb children. They don't want to participate in that. So in the Israeli minds, they should be destroyed. They should probably be destroyed. Now, of course, comparing Spain to Israel in this regard, you know, these parts of Spain that are in Africa, that's all it is. Spain is just, it just has, you know, possessions on the continent of Africa. Something being on the continent of Africa doesn't mean it is therefore colonialism. The people that live in Ceuta are Spanish and have been for a long time. What they're not doing in Ceuta, they do not have a wall around Ceuta. They do not withhold medicine and food from the people of Ceuta. They are not engaged in a genocide against the people who live in Ceuta. They don't have AI machine guns mounted above the gates around Ceuta to kill anybody trying to get out of Ceuta without permission. They are not doing to Ceuta what Israel does to Gaza. Now, the flip side of that is if Spain were to respond to yesterday's incursion like it was Ceuta, or like it was Israel, rather, then I guess they would be killing everybody in Morocco today. I guess as of today, they would have declared total war, cut off the food and water to Morocco, bombed the healthcare agencies trying to get help to them. Bruno Macias says, analysts at Israel-funded think tanks argued back in April that Israel should help Morocco take over Ceuta in order to punish Spain. So Spain has been against Israel in this conflict. They're also an extremely Catholic country. They also have a history of kicking out the Jews, which goes all the way back to the 700s when Spain was a Christian nation. But there were Jews living there. Those Jews, according to history and according to the Jewish Encyclopedia, helped open the city gates of places like Toledo, and in fact, may have even invited the Islamists in the first place. There was a scandal. There was a claim where in the 700s, Jews in Spain were caught corresponding with Jews in Africa, trying to coordinate an Islamic invasion of Spain. And they crushed that. But then they did it again and it worked. And the Islamists came over and were in coordination with the Jews in Spain. So in places like Toledo on Easter Day, the Jews of the city opened the city gates for the Muslims to come in, knowing that they would be given an elevated position under Islamic rulership. And that partnership continued for hundreds of years until the Reconquista. After the Reconquista, you had the Inquisition, because the Spanish were, I think, rightfully suspicious of, you know, the Jews who had hundreds of years ago created, you know, the invasion in the first place. And so they either forced them to convert or kicked them out of the country. That was in 1492, of course. And we all know what happened after that. God cursed them, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure I've heard from Ted Cruz's elderly Sunday school teacher that if you don't treat Israel nicely, then God will curse you. So what happened to Spain after they kicked out the Jews in 1942? Does anybody, or 1492 rather, anybody know? Anybody, what's that? A golden age? All right, well, never mind then. Never mind about all that. So let's see what people have actually said about this, what people like Yair Netanyahu, son of Benjamin Netanyahu, had to say about this back in May of 2019, even. This has been going on for a while. Dear Arabs and Muslims, want to occupy Arab Islamic lands? Here's a good start. And he posts a map of the Spanish possessions in Africa. But of course, also the southern part of Spain. So what he's saying is that, I guess, Spain is Islamic territory that he wants to return to them. He says, dear Spanish people, I see you all got upset. Ceuta and Melilla are tiny territories you own across the sea on another continent. Now imagine how we feel when your government calls for Israel to give away Judea and Samaria, the West Bank. Imagine how it feels when you tell us to stop murdering everyone. It hurts our feelings. Yeah, it's a little bit different, I think. I think it's a little bit different. The thing about Ceuta and Melilla, however you pronounce it, they're just Spanish enclaves. They're just Spanish people. They've existed for hundreds of years as Spanish people. They're not directly contingent with the, you know, mass of Spanish land, but that doesn't really matter. It's not like a thing. It's not like it doesn't actually matter. Like America still owns Hawaii. You get that? I know it's an island. I know it's not actually touching us, but that's not how geography or, you know, national possession works. It's just not how it works. But see, when it comes to the West Bank, when it comes to what they call Judea and Samaria, that under international law and by agreements that Israel signed, things like the Oslo Accord, doesn't belong to them. It's not theirs. Under international law, they are a invading, occupying force. And they're not just living there. They're engaged in daily pogroms. Earlier this week, there were multiple murders. And it's sort of a continual thing, whether they're kicking out the Christians of Bethlehem or Taba or the Shepherd's Field, where the angels appeared to the shepherds to tell them about the birth of Jesus Christ. The Christians that have lived on that land since the time of Christ are being systematically eradicated by the Israelis using their extremist West Bank settler terrorist clans to go commit violence. And then if the Palestinians defend themselves, the IDF see it as a, you know, reason to fight them. It's just a little bit different. I think it's a little bit I don't think anything like that is happening in Ceuta. I don't think Ceuta is technically under international law belong to Morocco. None of that is the case. So Spain objects to the ethnic eradication that Israel is carrying out in the West Bank. And so in response, the son of the president of Israel wants to encourage Muslims to take over parts of Spain, because that's just how they are. I mean, it just, you know, there's not a lot of reason to it. They're just bad people in general. Yair Netanyahu also says this: let's make a deal. We won't fund NGOs in your country calling for you to give away Ceuta and Melilla, and you will stop funding NGOs in our country that calls for us to give away Judea and Samaria. Again, they don't own Judea and Samaria. They don't have anything to give away. The proof that Spain is doing that, there is none. It's it's anti-Semitic to read this. I guess Yair Netanyahu is some sort of anti-Semite, I guess, spreading these tropes about, you know, Jewish infiltration, using Muslims as some sort of bioweapon, as the broom of Israel to sweep out the Christians who will adequately resist in favor of, you know, a bunch of sub 70 IQ barbarians that are more easy to manipulate and control. That dang Yair Netanyahu and his anti-Semitic conspiracy. But it goes on. We already covered Danny Dannon talking about, you know, how Spain lectures Israel. So I guess, you know, they should all be raped by Muslims. How dare you lecture Israel for, you know, committing genocide? But it actually gets a lot deeper than this. Let's see. We'll go to this one first. From Ynet Global. This was all the way back in April of this year. So April 26, 2026, Abraham Accords reach the Strait. How Israel can help Morocco reclaim its north. You know, the north part of Africa, the place where Ceuta and Melilla are. U.S.-Spain tensions over NATO, Iran, create opening for Morocco to press claims on Ceuta and Melilla, with Israel positioned to back Rabat, that's the capital of Morocco, diplomatically within U.S.-led alliance that increasingly favors cooperative partners over European holdouts. The geopolitical earthquake shaking Washington's relationship with Madrid has opened an unexpected window for one of the Arab world's biggest, oldest territorial grievances, Spain's refusal to allow the United States access to its Rota and Morón military bases during the Iran campaign, its consistent failure to meet NATO defense spending targets, and Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez's confrontational posture towards the Trump administration have collectively generated something rare in North African affairs, a genuine crack in Spain's strategic armor over Ceuta and Melilla. Into that crack, Morocco's most consequential new partner, Israel, is uniquely positioned to press. So, the end of April of this year, you have these big think tanks and articles like this out of Israel talking about how Israel would now be helping Morocco press its claims against Ceuta and the Spanish possessions in mainland Africa. And you have America, of course, participating in this because we are the slaves of Israel. It doesn't benefit us. It's not actually for us. I mean, the one thing you could say Spain did to us was it didn't help us wage a war in Iran for Israel. So it's like, okay, that's also for Israel. So again, according to Insurrection Barbie, you're an insane, brain-dead anti-Semite if you merely read the words of the Israelis explaining exactly what they're doing. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, the Jewish people are not occupiers in their own land, including our eternal capital, Jerusalem, nor in Judea and Samaria, our historical homeland. He, of course, being a descent of Poland, actually. PM Netanyahu, no absurd opinion in The Hague can ever deny our historical truth or legal right of Israelis to live in their own communities or their ancestral homes. Just don't expect them to, you know, extend that consideration to literally anybody else. OK, sure. Spain has been there forever, except for the couple hundred years where Jews in Spain helped the Muslims take over. But they have no respect for Spain's, you know, ancestral possessions. Those can all be removed if they dare to merely question or not actively participate in the horrific war crimes, crimes against humanity that Israel is constantly committing against everybody that doesn't obey them. The pieces have been assembling for months. In March 2026, Michael Rubin of the American Enterprise Institute, writing through the Middle East Forum, called on the Trump administration to formally recognize Ceuta and Melilla as occupied Moroccan territory, branding Spain a, quote, colonial power running colonies across the Strait of Gibraltar. Days later, Representative Mario Diaz-Balart, chairman of the House Subcommittee on National Security and one of Marco Rubio's closest congressional confidants, declared publicly that the enclaves are not in the geographical territory of Spain, but rather in Moroccan territory, and that their fate should be established, negotiated, and discussed between friends and allies. This was not fringe speaking. This was the architecture of a coordinated strategic repositioning. And yes, that did happen. In fact, you know, there are articles about that as well. U.S. Congressional Committee describes Ceuta and Melilla as located in Moroccan territory, which, of course, it's not. Not that we even think it is. We are just obviously making up excuses to explain America's opposition to Spain, which is, in fact, entirely predicated on their opposition to Israel. So, again, not that complicated. Spain doesn't want to help Israel, calls out Israel's genocide, doesn't provide weapons or a place for bombers to take off. Therefore, Israel wants Spain destroyed, or at the very least, they want to cause a diplomatic crisis. They want to turn on the spigot of, you know, hostile Muslim immigrants, which, by the way, Israel keeps telling us they're the West, they're the bulwark of the West. This is exposing the reality. They are genuine. Like, if you don't submit to them, if a Christian country refuses to participate in their genocide, then they see it as an excuse, as a perfectly valid excuse, to flood that country with migrants. Because I guess Muslims are easier to deal with and control because of their, religious / governmental structure tells them to obey their leadership with unthinking obeisance. Yeah, that's what's going on here. So, and really in a more sophisticated, like the actual way this is going is they're trying to force concessions from Spain. They're going, oh, is this that important to you, Spain? You don't want to let us use your, weapons to kill children? Well, then we're going to cause this problem over here. Then we're going to create this diplomatic crisis for you. And we can stop at any point. We can turn off that spigot. We can lean on Morocco and have them draw their guys back. We control this, pain we're inflicting on you. Don't you want to give us your weapons now? Don't you want to help us defend Western civilization now? So this is about using the biomass weapon of mass immigration to get diplomatic concessions for Israel. America, of course, doing this like the loyal dogs are politicians truly are for the state of Israel. We are perfectly willing to throw Spain to the dogs, throw Spain to the hostile foreigners for daring, even momentarily, to question Israel's actions, murdering everybody all the time. After kicking Spain out of Gaza, ceasefire center, Netanyahu promises that countries opposing Israel will pay an immediate price. But how dare you suggest that they might do anything like this? Itamar Ben-Gvir has published this. My congratulations to the president of the government of Spain, Pedro Sanchez, on his profound commitment to welcoming immigration and human diversity. As someone who demonstrates great concern for Hamas and the president and the residents of Gaza, I call on you to translate words into action. Open the doors of Spain and grant refuge to the residents of Gaza who seek to immigrate. This is an excellent opportunity to contribute a little more to Spain's, quote, human diversity. Obviously, he's being sarcastic. I think the correct action would be Spain should go to war with Israel. I think Spain should actually like deliver soldiers to defend Gaza. I think it's pretty obvious what's going on here. I think Spain should get everybody that crossed, into Ceuta. They should get them all in a boat and they should take them to Israel and drop them off there. They should see this for what it is. This is an attack by a hostile foreign state, Israel, against you, using Morocco and America as their proxies to try to pressure you to surrender your sovereignty to them so that you can participate in the genocide, so that you have no standing to criticize their genocide since you participated in it. Don't they do that here, right? If you say, hey, what Israel's doing is horrible, how many times have you heard, well, what about America blowing up that school in Iran? I guess all Americans are evil now, right? So they get you to participate in their crime so that then if you say, hey, you're committing a crime, they go, well, so are you. So you're a hypocrite for pointing it out. They would love Spain to be in that position. Right now, Spain has a clear conscience. It can criticize Israel because it's not actively participating in their murder scheme. So they really need Spain participating. So they're opening up this spigot. They're starting this attack. They sponsored and are coordinating this invasion to pressure Spain to give them what they want because they're at war with Spain, just like they're at war with Europe and at war with America. They like us less than they like the Muslims. Do you understand that? They are now sending Muslims into Spain. The Israeli government and the Israeli activists and the Israelis in Spain probably are using Muslims as a weapon against Spain because the Christians are standing up against them and the Muslims won't. It's not that complicated. It is just that evil. And if Spain wants to stop it, go to war.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do, they want to silence you. Is go after your merchant accounts. Go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. It's globalist siege. It's globalist economic warfare. It's a globalist blockade, an embargo, sanctions against American populist patriots. For everyone that's been watching and listening to me for years, you've seen the attacks. You've seen the deplatforming. You've seen the court battles, the news articles, the demonization, the bogus default judgments. We even have FBI and CIA operatives on hidden camera talking about how their entire goal was to take me out at the knees by knocking out my ability to accept payments. And that model they used on me, they admit, is for all of you.
Alex Jones.
Yeah, so we were after him.
So with Alex Jones, and the goal with him was what, just to bankrupt him?
Pretty much.
Well, because of First United payments and your support, they failed. And they failed because I had a processor with a backbone who loves America and believes in the free market. One who stands up for American justice and who didn't back down when they received threatening messages and pressure from other major institutions. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Consolidation, vertical integration, that is the goal of the BlackRock globalist system. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. This is the key to their entire panopticonic takeover plan in their own words. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. Visit First United Payments now at FirstUnitedPayments.com and talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. That's 877-899-1313. The tyrants are counting on us not to innovate. They're counting on us not to migrate to institutions and organizations that are pro-human just like us. This isn't some new company. I've been using them for almost a decade. They're already taking care of most of the patriots. Whether you're a florist, have a gas station, or you're a farmer, or you've got a little five and dime shop or a factory, whatever it is, online merchants, this is the place for you. These guys are patriots, and they're in our corner. They're Americans just like us, and they hate the New World Order with a passion. They believe in the free market, and they understand this is 1776 2.0. 90% of it is information warfare and financial, and this is just as important as the right to self-defense and guns. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Thank you so much. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Welcome back, folks. I don't know how they get away with this type of stuff. Like Laura Loomer says, the invasion of Spain by Islamic third world parasites is bad for society, but good for the acceleration we need to make the general public harbor animosity towards Islam. Now, the interesting thing there is you could replace the invasion of Spain, like you cut out those words, and you could put in the terrorist attacks on the World Trade Centers. You could put in October 7th, right? The October 7th attack by Islamic third world parasites is bad for society, but good for the acceleration we need to make the general public harbor animosity towards Islam. The 9/11 attacks, hey, a lot of people may have died, but actually it was good because it, you know, helped Americans understand the threat of terrorism. Like you can see in her statement, all the justification that an Israeli would need for encouraging and supporting terror attacks against Europe or the United States. And it's the very reasoning they use to justify their actual literal support of invasion by Muslims. I mean, we've played the videos here, the, you know, government-sponsored Israeli activists on the beach in Greece welcoming in the boatloads of Syrians, giving them humanitarian aid so that they can live in Greece instead of Israel. You know, wanting Spain to take in the Gazans. They're actually pushing that. I know Ben-Gvir says it in almost a sarcastic way, but that is literally the policy that they're pushing. Of course, there was also the video last month of Ben-Gvir himself at a rally where the speaker is talking to a bunch of IDF soldiers saying, we want the number one name in Europe to be Muhammad. They're on the same side. I don't know how else to tell you they're on the same side in this. It's the Israelis who are behind the influx of Muslims into Europe, like almost exclusively. The reason that so many people fled the Middle East is because Israel wanted Bashar al-Assad out. So America helped Israel start the civil war in Syria, helped create the conditions that forced people to flee and become refugees. And it was Israeli NGOs that set up the, you know, rat lines into Europe. It's not all that complicated. It's not that sophisticated. It's not even new. It's thousands of years old at this point. Go back to the 700s, and, you know, in case you're not up to date on that, according to historical tradition in medieval chronicles, the Jewish population of Toledo is said to have opened the gates of the city to the invading Muslim forces under Tariq ibn Zayed in 711, the year 711. Hardly had the Mohammedan Arabs subdued and organized the Berbers of North Africa when they were invited by the Spanish Jews across the 9-mile strip of water at Gibraltar and possessed themselves of the Christian nation. The plot was discovered and the Jews sternly punished. A second attempt, however, was successful at a moment when the Visigoth monarchy was perishing of its own follies. It remains a fact, says the Jewish Encyclopedia, that the Jews, either directly or through their co-religionists in Africa, encouraged the Mohammedans to conquer Spain. In 709, the Arab general Tariq led an army of Berbers, in which there were many African Jews across the straits, defeating and slaying King Rodrigo with the aid of Christian traders at the Battle of Jerez de la Frontera. They carried death in all directions through the peninsula. Wherever they went, the Jews threw open to them the gates of the principal cities, so that in an incredibly short time, the Africans were masters of all Spain, save the little kingdom of Asturias in the northern mountains, where the Christian survivors, who were unwilling to accept Islam, reassembled and prepared to win back their heritage. And boy, they will never let them forget it. So this is the type of thing where, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu will scoff or you know, any claim of, you know, Jewish malfeasance in any regard, right? It really doesn't matter what. But obviously he recently invoked it when people are like, did you kill Charlie Kirk? Because again, you know, they go on, you know, Mossad agents go on TV and they say everything in the world is a play that we put on. We are the screenwriters of the world. We are the main characters and we manipulate everything behind the scenes. And you're like, oh, so did you kill Charlie Kirk? And they're like, well, what? Us? We would never. It's like, okay, well, a little inconsistency there. You brag about how effective your assassination programs are. I mean, Benjamin Netanyahu himself is in a video with the ambassador to the United States, Huckabee, where Huckabee's like, I hope I'm not on your killing list. And Netanyahu's like, not for now. It's like, yeah, no, we know. You're like, you know, murderers, killers, gangsters, mobsters. You're like, we get it. We understand. It's not all that intimidating. You're just nobody will stand up to you because everybody is in leadership as cowards. It took a long time to get that situation set up, but it's set up very fully and not going anywhere anytime soon. We get it. We understand, but they want. But you know, he's asked if he's killed Charlie Kirk, and he's like, "Oh, these claims like Jews poison wells in medieval Europe," and it's like, "What? Did you kill Charlie Kirk?" Is what we didn't ask about wells in medieval Europe. Okay, nobody's you know, criticizing you for, you know, eating latke made with the blood of virgins. Like, what are you talking about? Did you participate in this geopolitical assassination is what we're asking. We're wiping them out. Netanyahu shows off kill list, punch card to a fawning Mike Huckabee. But if you suggest that we actually kill people, then you're hearkening back to old anti-Semitic tropes of the medieval times. Again, it's projection, right? All of this is just projection, because how many of you even knew about you know, Jews opening the gates of Toledo. It's not something that we talk about. It's not something that we care about. It's not something that we teach our kids. It's not something that occupies overwhelming space in our mind on current geopolitics. We are not factoring in Jewish betrayal from 1400 years ago. That's just not how normal people operate. But the Jews go and they flip off the Ark of Titus in Rome because they're still mad about getting kicked out of their temple 2000 years ago. They actively are engaged in subversion in Spain, still mad that they got kicked out in 1492. They will still make movies about the Tsar, whose only real crime was to be killed by a bunch of Jewish Bolshevik extremists. There's a through line, a trend, a pattern of insane revenge fantasies pursued and carried out and held on to, preserved for thousands of years. So now we're going to take that into account. So if that's what's dictating your behavior, it needs to be a part of our calculus as well. And you might think it's ridiculous for me to say that, you know, Israelis in the modern world are targeting Spain because Spain had the Inquisition in the 1400s. But that's what that's their mindset. Just like people call me crazy for pointing out that Benjamin Netanyahu says the war in Iran is to bring about the Messiah and to build the third temple, and that they attack on Purim as a, you know, symbol of their, you know, undying resistance against the Persians from all the way back in the pre-biblical times. Crossing names off the list is good. Like, Netanyahu's literally bragging about it. But if you accuse him of it, then you're perpetuating medieval anti-Semitic stereotypes, but it's those medieval anti-Semitic stereotypes that they still feel the need to wreak revenge on Europe over. So I don't like this poisonous, archaic, long, you know, forgotten mindset that it seems like the Israelis alone, you know, preserve, hold on to, cling desperately to these revenge fantasies about things they never experienced and, you know, in some cases either didn't really happen or were well-deserved, right? Like the Spanish Inquisition. It's like, it's not like they just decided all of a sudden, like, let's just, you know, now that we've reconquered Spain, now that we've, you know, kicked all the Muslim invaders out, you want to be mean to Jews? I just feel like being mean to Jews today. Should we do that for no reason? Let's do that for no reason. It's like, well, they were scared it was going to happen again. They were scared that what happened in 7-Eleven would happen again. And you can't exactly blame them. Just like you can't exactly blame the Jews for worrying that the Holocaust might happen again. Doesn't give you an excuse, though. Just saying. I'm just saying. You have people like Laura Loomer saying the invasion of Spain by Islamic third world parasites is actually kind of good. It's actually a good thing because, you know, Israel is the bulwark of the West. It's Israel slash the West versus the Islamo-communist, you know, terrorist, except, you know, Israel is filling Europe with the Islamic communist terrorists and then using that as an excuse to attack the European states and force concessions from them and force diplomatic, you know, partnership with them. We aren't saving the West. Well, she could just stop right there. Well, there's a sentence that she could just stop after the word West. She says, the invasion of Spain by Islamic third world parasites is bad for society, but good for the acceleration we need for the general public to harbor animosity towards Islam. We aren't saving the West. Oh, sorry. She goes on. Until people realize Islam is our enemy. Okay. Then why are you in favor of sending them into Europe? You're the enemy. I have a different idea. We aren't saving the West till people realize Israel is our enemy. I'm sure, I mean, maybe if Spain was more like Ukraine, Laura would like them. I mean, we know Laura Loomer just went to fillet Zelensky and give him cover and give the leftist media all the headlines they want to write about MAGA's heel turn on Ukraine. MAGA loves Ukraine now. Laura Loomer went to Ukraine. Therefore, all of Trump supporters now are in favor of the Ukraine war. What a crazy turnaround. So she's like a propagandist for our enemies. I think that should be obvious. But maybe, you know, Spain would be better if it was like Ukraine. Maybe Spain should get in some unwinnable war against a much larger neighbor, and then you can have Spanish recruitment vans going around and grabbing up all the Spanish men and shipping them off to die on the front lines while the government actively replaces them with immigrants from sub-Saharan Africa and India. You know, maybe then, you know, Spain will have been sufficiently punished for, you know, daring to try to convert the Jews in the 1400s. Maybe then Laura will support it. I mean, then they'll understand, you know, truly, you know, how important it is to surrender to Israel. Again, you want to look at what's happening in Europe. Look first and foremost at Ukraine, where you have, by the way, do you remember in like the first week of the Ukraine war, like as soon as Russia invaded, Israel and the Jewish diaspora funded a gigantic like airlift to get every Jew out of Ukraine as quickly as possible. And like hundreds of thousands of Jews fled Ukraine immediately and went to Israel and elsewhere. And still to this day, there's like pilgrimages certain weeks, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Jews go into Ukraine and entire sections of the country are forbidden to everybody who's not a Jew. Like, have y'all seen those videos? During certain parts of the year in Ukraine, you can find videos, people going down the street and the cops come up, you got to stop, Jews only. And they're like, what? And they're filming this. And the cops are like, yeah, Jews only, you know, from here, you know, you got to be Jewish to go down the road here. It's just like in the middle of a city. And they're just like, nope, Jews only from here on out. It's like, why doesn't Spain do that? You know, that would really show how committed Spain is to, you know, Western civilization. If they would just, you know, start a stupid war where they can forcibly send their young men to die on a battlefield so that they can open up spaces for Indians and Africans, you know, then Spain will be truly preserving the West like Ukraine is. So like taking this all into account and taking the language of the Israelis, like they're all, you know, everything we've read so far is just like, if Spain criticizes Israel, Israel's response is like, let's destroy Spain. Let's fill Spain with Muslims. Let's work with Morocco so that they can capture Spanish territory, right? There you go. Ukraine has set up checkpoints only allowing Jews to pass through. Anybody else find this to be odd? Yeah, a little bit. That's a little odd, I think. Yeah, a little bit. But it's the heavenly Jerusalem, of course. But that's a good Western preservation, preserving country, not Spain with their humanitarian standards. And obviously, I'm not a fan of Pedro Sanchez. He is also destroying Spain. This is the real frustration with all of this, obviously, is that on one hand, you have the Israelis who, unless your country is dedicated entirely to them and giving up your sovereignty for them and going to war for them and using your diplomatic power to force other countries to do things for them, like unless you are fully subservient to Israel, they want to destroy you and will send, you know, Muslims in to carry that out and then blame you for not being sufficiently militant towards Muslims. And it's like, okay, take all this into account. Adopt the Israeli mindset a little bit and go, Spain, you should be at war with Israel. They are at war with you. You should be at war with them. You should accept their challenge. How do you think Israel would respond if it was discovered that Spain actively participated in October 7th? How do you think Israel would respond if it was discovered that the government of Spain was in close communication with the leadership of Hamas and in fact encouraged them to attack on October 7th, helped them with logistics, pressured them diplomatically to do the attack? Because that is what's happening in reverse. Israel is using the Muslims to attack Spain and then saying, Spain, this is your fault. You need to help us fight Muslims more. No, you need to fight them. You need to fight Israel. Problem is, they won't, because socialists are retarded and they don't actually dislike Israel. They dislike white colonialism and they see Israel as white colonialists. Did I mention they're retarded? Did I mention that they have absolutely no ability to stand up against the actual attacks? Because it would be in contradiction to Pedro Sanchez's entire platform of bring in the Muslims, bring in the immigrants. Israel is just saying, okay, have them. Again, it's this false dichotomy that Israel basically forces you into. And I can't for the life of me figure out why people who seem so clear-eyed and correct about the genocidal state of Israel, they can't recognize how that same genocidal motive, the same genocidal spirit is what you know, gives force to the Muslim immigration that's destroying their country, but they're actively in support of that. It's madness. It is absolute madness. The only, you know, correct path here is for Spain to remember it's a Christian country and to remember what happened in Toledo in 7-Eleven and fight, and to fight for their existence, just like the rest of Europe should be doing as well. But it really sucks. But honestly, there's no winning of this because the socialists in charge of Spain don't need any help. They don't need any help destroying their own country. They're actively and aggressively involved in that anyway. But we'll move on now. We will move on. I got a bunch of videos to show you. And we'll stick, I guess, momentarily with the pernicious influence of Israel. In this case, the war in Iran. That, you know, just, I know it's every day. I know it's every day, and I know I repeat myself a little bit, but, you know, when you go back and you sort of are, like, compiling stories for the week or whatever it is, you just see this, like, the invasion of Spain. You know, in just the last week, you've got this invasion of Spain. You've got the terrorist attack in Germany with the car ramming, injuring 29 people, killing a woman. You have a stabbing terrorist attack in France. You have a town in England, in the UK, actually trying to secede from the UK because their town is only 300 people and they're being forced to accept 1,200 foreign refugee asylum seekers, all adult men. 1,250 adult men being dropped off in a town of 300. Like, the invasion is on. The takeover is on. The war has been declared. The Europeans have surrendered, I guess. It's just a long, slow, humiliating defeat of a continent. And then you look at America, and it's like five different stories about black people who murdered children in their bed, being let out 2 years later because of insanity. Please. I mean, it really just goes on and on. And you're seeing this, and if you're absorbing it correctly, you're recognizing there is a war of extermination against white people, a war of extermination against Americans and Europeans. And it's, so it's like, it's almost like a perfect split. It's like for every story you have about how some horrifying trauma is being inflicted on Europeans, you have another story about how America is using all of its diplomatic power, all of its military power, all of its influence we can muster to help Israel perpetuate the crisis. It's like a one-for-one thing. And you don't see any movement from any direction actually stopping the horrible things that are actually happening. The actual problems that are destroying us are going completely unresolved, completely unaddressed even, while we are, I think we just spent $58 billion on more weapons for the war in Iran. We are now talking about doing a land invasion of some sort, whether on the Karg Islands or they're talking about a land blockade around Iran. These are ridiculous fantasies that we have to keep coming up with because the other option would be ask Israel to stop killing Lebanese people and we won't do that. So we're coming up with all these crazy fantasy scenarios where we can block off Iran from trade with China by creating a land barrier, like we're going to put an entire nation under siege and not allow anything in and out. This ain't Gaza, folks. You can't do that with Iran, but they have to come up with something because the only other option would be not being at war for Israel, and that's not something that they're willing to even entertain. So let's go now to clip 18. This is Senator Dick Durbin. Once again, you know, it's just you elect Donald Trump to bring a sledgehammer against the rising tide of democratic socialism and to oust the immigrants. And instead, he takes that sledgehammer, hands it to the Democrats and says, have fun. And they just are wailing on Republicans with everything they've got because Republicans suck and do everything for Israel. So here is yet another just perfect, unqualified victory delivered to the Democrats by Donald Trump, who could be doing literally anything other than being a slave of Israel, and we'd be happy, and his supporters would be thrilled, and the Democrats would be on the ropes instead. we go off to do this utterly retarded, stupid, meaningless war in Iran for the sake of Israel, and the Democrats get to make hay and get elected, install their DSA opponents, and Dick frickin' Durbin now seems like the reasonable one because Israel makes Republicans retarded. Here's Dick Durbin.
We start with this little document called the United States Constitution.
Oh, look, the Democrats are flaunting the Constitution.
To uphold and defend this document. And we go to Article 1, the first article in the Constitution, Section 8, and it spells out with clarity who declares war under this Constitution. The Congress of the United States. We're now engaged in a war in Iran. Did the Congress declare war on Iran? No. Did the president even ask Congress to declare war on Iran? No. Well, were there public hearings in Congress about this decision to invade Iran, to attack Iran? No. Did this president of the United States go to the allies of the United States, like the NATO allies, to discuss the invasion of Iran? No. This president decided that we would go to war on his own, strictly on his own, without regard for what the Constitution requires. Now, I'm glad to concede that there have been many presidents who have gone to war under similar circumstances, but almost without exception, they at least took the case to the American people directly or through Congress. This president did not. So where are we today? $88 billion. That's how much has been spent so far in Iran. We're in the fifth month of the first year of a never-ending war that this president promised over and over again at his rallies would never, ever, ever happen under his watch.
Yeah, well, he's not wrong. He's not wrong. But it's okay because, well, technically you're allowed to do a military excursion that's 60 days. Of course, this one's gone on for significantly longer than that. But we pretended to stop for a little bit. But actually, we said, you know, no backsies. We, you know, there's some sort of phrase invoked where it's like, okay, we surrender, now we're at war. Okay, good. Now it's a new war and we get a new 60 days because apparently they can do that sort of stuff. I mean, that type of sort of manipulation, that type of, you know, bending the rules a little bit, it doesn't work if you're trying to, you know, get away with not paying $5 in taxes. They won't let you do that. Something as serious as that. But, you know, when it comes to war that's collapsing the international economy, that's creating scarcity and going to cause starvation worldwide, then, yeah, you get to do these little parliamentary tricks. You know, oh, 60 days is up. Okay, the war's over. Now it started again. Whew, new war, new 60 days. Great trick.
The dirty, dark, dastardly villain is after the methylene blue formula.
Feast your eyes on the magical methylene blue. Don't wait. Get yours today while supplies last.
Come on now, Bandit. We gotta get this truck on the road.
Are we gonna do what they say can't be done?
Let's get a move on.
We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound and run, oh bandit, run. Keep your foot hard on the pedal. Some never mind it breaks. Let it all hang out, cause we got a run to make. The boys are thirsty in Atlanta, and there's beer in Texarkana. So we'll bring it back no matter what it takes. Eastbound and down. We gonna do what they say can't be done. We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just watch old bandit run.
receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.